At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. And happy Friday to everyone out there. This is our March 22nd, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm joined on this Friday, 5 days in a row, Luke. This is the first time you've done 5 days in a row, correct?
No, remember you decided to go on vacation one time, so I had to do, seven days in a row by myself, and luckily people didn't stop listening. I was really happy with that, but I would not miss ushering in the round of 32. How could I?
And that's what we are doing. We continue on with the InvestTalk Market Madness contest, and today was the end of the round of 64, the first round, and there were some winners, and we're going to highlight the round two matchups that start on Monday. And today's winners, let me get through that real quick. AES was one. That's a utility company. Clorox, CMCO, Columbus McKinnon Corp, Dominion Resources, RHP Ryman Hospitality, Kimberly-Clark, One Oak, and Marathon Petroleum. Those were the winners for today. And like you said, we're on to the round of 32, and we're going to highlight the four matchups in that. We're going back to the new economy region, and we'll see those matchups on Monday, and we'll preview them here in a little bit. But we're going to cover the market performance for today, run down the show topics, but as always, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hello, and thank you for your podcast. I love your program. I'm calling about C4 Therapeutics Incorporated, ticker symbol CCCC. I'm wondering what your viewpoint on this stock is. I have a short position. My average is around 677. Please give me a viewpoint on this company and its debt, et cetera. Thank you.
All right. Looking at quadruple C. Quadruple C is the symbol, and this is your classic biotech company, C4 Therapeutics. They do not make money. They've never made money. They're a serial issuer of shares. Do they have much debt here? I see no long-term debt, but that's because, like a lot of biotechs, they don't access their capital through the bond market. They access their capital by issuing more and more shares. And as of October 2020, they had about 43 million shares outstanding, and now 68 million shares outstanding. So, you know, it's not a company that's going to probably go bankrupt. They do have a lot of cash on hand, et cetera, but they're burning a lot of capital, about 108 million free cash flow trailing 12 months. So, you know, they're going to have to continue to access the capital markets, and they're just going to dilute shareholders likely into oblivion, like most biotech, money-losing biotech companies do. So I kind of like the short, even though he's down on it, trading at 822. I think this is a structurally bankrupt company unless they have some sort of major breakthrough, which, as you know, Luke, that happens far less often than most biotech investors tend to think it does, right?
Yeah, that does happen. I mean, looking at how the market perceives it, the short interest out there is actually only 5%. So it's not egregious. There's not a lot of people out there that are shorting this company compared to some other companies. You saw a price pop in January that kind of tapered off, but it picked up at the end of January, really. And that's because they started to restructure their company. They cut, I think, 14% of costs, it looks like. And actually, 2 weeks ago, they just got a $756 million deal with Merck to, if the research bears out, produce drugs associated with their protein protein degradation, which is them essentially trying to target cancer cells, right? So I think in terms of other money-losing biotechs, this one is actually probably in a better position than a lot of them, getting some huge funding numbers in the past couple weeks. I don't know. It's the thing about this is anytime good news happens with a biotech company, you're going to have these price pops. It's going to come back down unless they actually end up making the drug. How long do you want to hold that out? What's the cost of shorting it? I'm not sure offhand. But I wouldn't long this company, but I don't know if I'd hold my short open for that long.
Well, it did pop. It was trading at around $1.20 back in early December, then had that pop and rallied all the way to a peak around $12 per share, now down to $8.22. And from a technical perspective, it's rolled over. It had a breakdown back on March 14th. It's consolidating bearishly right around the 50-day moving average. So I might have a stop around maybe $11. If it gets back above then this reversal has reversed and things are still looking up technically. But near term, this looks like something greatly losing momentum, consolidating bearishly. So I'd probably hold on to it. But like Luke said, you know, it seems like Merck's interested, so there can always be a buyout potential, and that would be probably the biggest nightmare. And so I would probably hold my short, but I would have an out on it for sure. Thanks for the call. We have a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, and our main focus point is in regards to CEOs and shareholders and how they're getting a bigger slice of the pie and why that might be so. So we're going to talk about shareholder primacy, the tech layoff surge over the past couple of years, and whether unionization can change the trends in who wins when it comes to corporations and their profits. Okay. We're also going to touch on a few other topics. One is in regards to oil demand. What's interesting is that you have OPEC and you have the IEA. I always get those two letters mixed up. The IEA, and that is headed by the United States. And so they both have different outlooks on long-term oil demand. And the big question is, who's right? So we're going to dig into that story. And then if we have time, we're going to touch a bit on immigration policy, both here in the United States as well as in Asia, and how positive and negative immigration is moving the economy in both positive and negative directions. So we're going to talk about what trends we're seeing there as well. And of course, we're going to highlight the round of 32 matchups coming up in a little bit. We're also going to get to some voice bank questions. One is on Vanguard Value ETF, VTV, and the other is SPYI, which is the S&P High Income ETF. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions most of all. You are number one, so 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about the market madness matchups and run down today's planned topics, as well as review what happened in the market today. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place, InvestTalk. And Justin Klein is here now taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today, Luke, as we closed up the week. We had a broad sell-off, really. Certainly more on the small caps, down over 1% there. Large cap growth also struggled as well. You had that was down about 0.8% on the day. Nike was down nearly 7% on disappointing guidance. But then you had names like UPS were and FedEx were up nicely as well. So kind of a mixed bag when it came to earnings, but general sell-off as we head into the weekend. What did you see?
Yeah, well, like you said, U.S. equities closed mostly lower on a pretty uneventful day in terms of the news, but still the major indices logged pretty good gains for the week. And a lot of that was on the back of a frankly dovish Fed. Some expected maybe there'd be a slight hawkish turn. There was a little bit in terms of their outlook for 2025 and 2026 on the dot plot, but overall there's some pretty good news for the case of the rally continuing. The broad market leadership kind of expanded. 80% of the S&P constituents are now above their 200-day moving averages. So some of that discussion about a potential bubble kind of eased this week in the wake of the Fed's discussion around the path of interest rates. Now, looking ahead to next week, there's new home sales coming in, a treasury auction, and, of course, PCE at the end of the week. But I think from a narrative perspective, not much change. The big news obviously coming in midweek from the Fed.
Yeah, that's I think the big question is, what is that next catalyst for markets? We just had a Fed meeting. We're not going to hear much from the Fed officially for a while. Obviously, there will be some Fed governors that come out and they give speeches, and that could potentially move the markets. You are going to get the Fed minutes. That's usually what, about 3 weeks after the actual Fed meeting. So that could move markets. But we're through earnings season at this point, right? We're just finishing up the first quarter. So that's probably the next catalyst, right? You know, seeing how the first quarter ends up, I think economic growth still remains relatively robust for the first quarter. And a lot will depend on what that outlook looks like, because if Nike is a good example, Nike's earnings were pretty much fine. You had flat year-over-year revenue growth, but up 24% year-over-year earnings growth. But they guided to only 1% revenue growth going forward. So that's when it's trading at, you know, high 20s multiple, flat growth just doesn't cut it. And that's why it was down. So I think that will be what's most interesting for the first quarter earnings. And that will be the next, I think, catalyst for markets. All right, now why don't we highlight the matchups for today? And we already talked a little bit about these names on Monday when we highlighted the first round, but let's go through them. We have Vertiv, VRT versus Roblox. And Vertiv, I see this one as a bit overbought near term. What about Roblox? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, Roblox. I mean, we all know what Roblox is. It's a gaming company. In terms of its fundamentals, you and I both don't think it's fundamentally strong. And it's also been weak. It was down 1.14% today. Year to date, it's down 18%. I think in this matchup, I would probably have to go with Vertiv.
Yeah, the momentum certainly much stronger. I think you just had a nice day for Roblox on Monday. It was oversold, on Tuesday, and it was oversold. And so I think that's why it got through the first round, but I don't think it's going to get through the second round here on Monday. We also have Blend Labs, BLND. And we know that they're the ones that make the, the digital lending platform. I'm sorry. I was confusing with another one. Digital lending platform sold off the last couple of days, so it's a little bit oversold near term. I kind of like the setup for Monday. What are you seeing with NetApp?
Yeah, well, NetApp, ticker NTAP, it's a software cloud services company. It was actually down 30 basis points today, which diverged from some mid caps, which were down significantly more. It still looks strong. Honestly, it's up 18% year to date. I'd probably go with NetApp.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. Let's see, what else? I'm going back and forth between different systems here. The next one is Motorola Solutions versus Cytokinetics. And we know MSI is a much more stable business, consistent business, and the momentum is very strong here. And it closed almost at a 52-week. Yesterday was at a 52-week high. What about Cytokinetics?
Cytokinetics, CYTK, interestingly enough, it's up 51.17% in the past 3 months, but still down 20% year-to-date. But it's been incredibly strong. It was up 2.11% today, even with what happened with the overall market. Given its divergence from the market, I think I'm going to go with Cytokinetics.
Yeah, I'll go with that one as well. I like the near-term momentum. And the last one will be Halozyme Therapeutics, H-A-L-O, versus Frontier Fiber. What are your thoughts here?
Frontier was down 3%. I think I'm going to go with Halo.
Could be oversold. I'll go with Frontier on this one for Monday. But those are the matchups for Monday, so we'll see, and we'll give you the results on Monday. We're moving to a quick break, so give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our focus point today concerns this question. Are CEOs and shareholders taking a greater slice of profits than you might think? And the question is, are we in a new gilded age where, you know, corporations and CEOs are benefiting the most from these profits? And if you look at some studies, and this is from a British nonprofit, and they looked at 200 U.S. corporations, and it looks like, according to them, 90% of the profits go to the shareholders or CEOs. And we know this makes sense because they're the stakeholders, right? But workers are stakeholders as well. So I think that's the crux of this study, is that CEO pay has ballooned, 31% increase from 2018 to 2022. And company taxation has gone down mainly due to lobbying efforts. And this is a trend. It really started all the way back, frankly, in the 70s, right, where shareholder primacy took hold. And in the 80s, stock buybacks were deemed legal. And then under Reagan, as well as the Trump administration, corporate taxes fell. And then obviously 2010 Citizens United decision allowed pretty much unlimited amounts of money going into political campaigns. So, you know, the question is, will this eventually hit a breaking point, Luke, and turn the other direction? If you think about it, you know, one of the reasons that there's a lot of pushback from the Biden administration saying people aren't happy, his approval rating isn't very high, but the economy is so good. And I think the pushback here is that, yes, the economy is good for those that are at the top, but not necessarily at the bottom, even though unionization is growing. You see that with the UAW and Starbucks unionization, et cetera. But, you know, can the lobbying efforts continue to keep a grip on those profits, or are they going to have to eventually share the wealth a little bit more? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you have two competing interests. As we've talked about over the past couple years, really, unions have been making great strides in terms of labor rights. And this isn't the first quote-unquote gilded age in America, right? Teddy Roosevelt was the president who helped bust a lot of trusts and break apart the gilded age back in the 1900s. But I think the difference between then and now is, you know, in 1907, a law was passed that banned corporate contributions in elections. And so passing laws that busted trusts and helped rectify income inequality was frankly a little bit easier. I think that Citizens United changed a lot of things, and that infinite money flowing into politics meant that special interests had more of a say than they ever had before. Do I think eventually there will be a come to Jesus moment, if you will, where the interests of labor supersede the interests of the wealthy? Because at the end of the day, no matter how much you spend in politics, every person still has one vote. Yes. But it definitely is a worrying trend that income inequality continues to go up, because like you said at the top of this segment, right, you said that workers are stakeholders as well. And that's true. Workers are stakeholders, but the wealthy are the shareholders. And corporate compensation, especially the CEO level, has shifted more and more towards stock-based compensation. And so as markets have been flying, the wealthier get more and more wealthy, and those who can't even afford to participate in the markets have been left out of the wealth that has grown in the past 20 years. So things tend to get worse before they get better, but eventually the system does change when the people who are the labor in the capital system find themselves struggling to get by.
Yeah, and that's when you look at the wealth gap between the CEO and worker pay, it continues to rise, especially in companies like McDonald's. The CEO to worker gap is 1,745 to 1. That's pretty high. Coca-Cola, it's 1,594 to 1. That's the ratio of what the CEO gets paid versus the average worker. So, something I think does have to give, and I think that's my explanation of why, you know, there continues to be a lot of dissatisfaction with both parties, with both leaders of each party, as well as the fact that this will be the first election where the independent group of voters outnumbers both combined, the Republican and Democrat aligned voters. So, that's something I think will eventually break. But until Citizens United is somehow reversed, which doesn't seem like that's happening anytime soon, curbing corporate power to create a situation where effective tax rates continue to go down. Remember, politicians can talk a lot about trying to tax the wealthy, trying to tax corporations, but usually the tax lawyers find ways around it. And if they don't, they have lobbyists that do that as well, especially when you have bills that are thousands and thousands of pages long that the vast majority of Congress doesn't read, right? They kind of stuff things in there. So that's kind of the situation that you have now. And it'll be interesting to see what this election brings and if the next administration does anything to curb this power. Well, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: housing market predictions for 2024 to 2028. As mortgage rates slowly fall, more buyers and sellers will enter the market, but housing prices should stabilize. That story Monday. But for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we are ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin. I'm calling about SPYI and QQQI, both covered calls, both really high dividends, paid out monthly distributions. I think somewhat newish as well, and wanted to kind of get your thoughts about possibly adding this into a income-generating portfolio. Wanted to see, you know, if you guys thought it would be a possible good idea to put a little half position or so in both, or something you guys think that I should stay far away from. Looking forward to hearing your response on the show, and love what you guys do. Thank you.
All right, looking at SPYI and QQQI, these are both relatively new covered call ETFs. There are others in the market. I don't know if they're more expensive or less than this. 68 basis points, Luke, is that correct on the expense ratio?
Both of them. Both of them, yes.
So, you know, you could probably run this strategy cheaper by, it depends how much money you have, really. But this is obviously a simple way to gain access to a simple strategy, a covered call strategy, owning the underlying Qs or underlying SPY. We run a covered call strategy. We're obviously not just indexing. We're buying all income-producing stocks, dividend-paying stocks, whereas this has a mix, right? It's just indexing with the underlying and then selling the calls. The performance is going to be not as probably good when the market's trending higher like it is now versus the broad index, but obviously do much better when the market's trending lower like in 2022. And this SPYI was launched, looks like late 2022, early 2023, and QQQI just recently launched, right?
Yeah, it was within the last 3 months because it doesn't have a quarter-to-date performance.
Yeah. Both are pretty illiquid. I would look at others in the space. I have no problem with the strategy overall, but I understand that this is just a lower risk way to index. But I always say with any cover call, it's about the underlying asset. And is the NASDAQ and the S&P going to be the best way to access the equity markets when maybe the tech stocks are starting to underperform now? So that's why I think a more active approach makes sense. But these are simple strategies. I'd say that. Now, Friday's show is moving fast. Let's keep up the pace and play two questions in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hey, Justin and Luke, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Healthpeak Properties, ticker symbol DOC. Wanted to get your thoughts here. Seems to be on the lower end of its 52-week. Average, and wanted to kind of dip my toes in it. Seems to have a pretty solid dividend, and wanted to get you guys' opinion on if it's a stable company, stable dividend, all that good stuff. Looking forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thank you.
Luke, whenever I hear someone say stable dividend, I don't say cringe, but I question that immediately. And that's what you're seeing here is a 6.8% dividend yield, and people are going to think that looks amazing. But as I've said many times, don't chase the yield. And to me, when you see a stock with a high dividend yield and in a downtrend in the stock price, that's a pretty poor combination to have because the market is telling you something. So what do you think the market is telling investors right now about Healthpeak?
Yeah, well, I mean, the dividend in terms of dollars per share has been on a downtrend over the past 5 years. 5 years ago, it was 148. It was 120 the past 2 years. And sales have been slowing. Revenue growth has been slowing. It's about 3.4% on a five-year average. So their average dividend yield has been around 4.2, right? It's sitting at 6.8% now. Given the trend in terms of their increase in debt over the past 5 years from 6 to 7 billion and a slowdown in revenue growth, I don't see how they wouldn't cut their dividend at some point.
Yeah, that's the problem here is their debt continues to go up and their funds from operation, because that's how you measure quote unquote earnings, right? It's not earnings per share for a REIT, it's funds from operation. That has been flat to down. 2017, $1.95, and this year is supposed to be $1.77, down 1 cent from last year. So flat to negative growth, with a good amount of debt. The chart continues to head lower. It was at $37 per share back in 2021. Now we're at 17 and change. So as I've always said, don't chase the yield. And it seems like you're chasing the yield here. So I would absolutely pass on DOC. Thanks for the call. Now, look, let's talk a little bit about oil demand. And two of the largest organizations in the oil space would be OPEC and the IEA. So OPEC is the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, and they have demand forecasts continue to grow well through 2030 and all the way through 2045. Whereas the International Energy Agency, which U.S. mainly funds, actually sees oil demand peaking in 2030 and declining from there. And a lot of this is really contrasting views on how well the energy transition will go. Who's right here?
As often is the case, the truth tends to be somewhere in the middle. I think probably the U.S.-backed organization is a little hopeful, as they have been in terms of their transition standards and transition goals. I think people think we're far behind on the transition goals, but actually we're pretty near, as a recent study suggested that I saw the other day. But I do think that from a region, OPEC, that is primarily their wealth is predicated upon the use of oil, natural gas, and fossil fuels, of course they're going to say that peak demand is nowhere in sight. I will say, however, in their defense, you know, over the past 30 years, the U.S. and the West, some parts of the West, have done a better job than some parts of the eastern part of this world in terms of transitioning, right? Chinese oil demand hasn't really fallen as much as U.S. oil demand has. U.S. greenhouse gas emissions have fallen. A lot of the developing and emerging market world has actually increased. So, like I said, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. These two organizations certainly have competing interests. But I do expect at some point we will reach peak demand. I don't think it's ever going to go away. I don't think oil and natural gas aren't going to be a part of the future. But at a certain point, given the dynamics, I think it will shift.
Well, this year, oil demand is supposed to reach a new record of 104 million barrels per day in global demand. And the way that I look at it is there are a few increasing demands for power. One is obviously AI. Think of all the need for electricity to run these new data centers where all of this data is being processed. And then you think of all of the reshoring of manufacturing here to the U.S. There's a lot of oil demand there. Now, eventually, you get to a point where maybe that levels out, and the need for fossil fuels to build these facilities starts to wane. So that's probably still a number of years out, though. And then EVs, you know, the demand for EVs, as we see with Tesla's earnings, Rivian, all of these companies had, and even the Fords and the GMs of the world, they were all betting big on EV demand really taking off. And pretty much all of these companies are guiding towards weak EV adoption. And there are many reasons for that. But at the end of the day, that means the IEA's projections of EV adoption is unlikely to be met. So I still think that the demise of fossil fuels is much farther in the future than most optimists are hoping. And so it's going to be interesting to see what type of supply can actually meet that record demand, as we've seen here. And not the oil companies haven't really been investing nearly at the scale that they need to. And the question is also, what about the rest of the world? We know here in the U.S., we produce more oil than we ever have, and that's probably the thing that's saving the energy markets, the oil markets, the economies more broadly, is just there's been a lot of production here in the U.S. to meet that record demand. So, you know, will that continue? Maybe. Do you want to bet against the ingenuity of the U.S. oil and gas industry? So far, that's been a bad bet. But I think it's pretty clear that demand is unlikely to peak in 2030, in my mind. So I wanted to touch a bit on that because there's definitely differing views from two large bodies. Now, 2024 is humming along, and we're moving almost through the first quarter. Is next week the end of the first quarter, Luke?
It is. That's crazy.
Wow, that's crazy, yeah. Next Friday, because the first is the following Monday, yeah. So the question is, how'd you do in the first quarter? What trends did you see in the first quarter, maybe in the first month, that maybe shifted in the back half of the quarter? And are you prepared for this shift? Because the trends that typically end a quarter tend to bleed into the next quarter. So question is, do you have the strategy that will benefit from these emerging trends? And if you need help understanding whether you do or whether your portfolio is aligned with your overall goals, we encourage you to reach out to our company, KPP Financial, where we operate the same philosophy, which is independent thinking and shared success. And we also invest right alongside our clients, which we call parallel investing. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment by heading over to our website, clicking on the portfolio review button on the top right-hand part of the screen, filling that out, and we'll get you on our calendar. Now, this is Invest Talk with more than 58 million downloads, and now our podcast is available in video form on YouTube. So just head over there and search Invest Talk, and you can see Luke and I, along with some of the data that we use to answer your questions on every show. Now, hang on. Our work continues in 30 seconds.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Justin and Luke, hey, this is Mike calling from Utah. Just had a question about two funds, actually, that I'd like to take a look at. I know you guys are fairly bullish on the small cap sector. Could you look at AVUV, the Avantis Small Cap Value? And then the other one I had in mind was the SPGP, that's Growth at a Reasonable Price by Invesco. I know that one's not small cap, but if you just give me your thoughts on both of those, I'd love it. I appreciate you guys. Thanks a lot.
Luke, I know you have some insight on the Avantis fund. Why don't you give them that?
Avantis funds were started by a couple alums of the company for which I used to work, Dimensional Fund Advisors. So I do know the guy that runs the people that run these funds. They're all of them, great funds, relatively cheap, 25 basis points. You're going to get small cap value exposure. That's a lot better than a lot of people are going to do for you. The Invesco fund, for example, which is large cap, I think it starts with the S&P 500 and then looks for growth potential there, is going to give you 36 basis points in terms of fees. So 25 is very low for small and especially small value. AVUV is going to tilt based on profitability and value metrics. I don't know if they use price to book, but they probably use something that's a similar sorting mechanism. So you're going to end up tilting towards the part of the small cap market that is more profitable and at lower relative prices. Like I said, when you're looking for these types of asset exposures, you want well-managed funds with relatively low turnover that are diverse and are cheap, and this certainly fits the bill. Did you have a chance to take a look at a SPGP, Justin? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, like you said, it's a large cap, and pretty interesting, the sector weighting. It has less tech, 28% is the category, and this has about 22%. What most interesting is that the S&P only has about a 4% energy weight, and this fund is at about 26%. It just shows you know, they're using some sort of sorting mechanism, like you said, growth at a reasonable price, and according to their metrics, and ours as well, energy is a sector that has the best growth at reasonable price because that is the largest weighting of this fund. Interesting enough, there's no utilities in the fund, which is 2% of the broader S&P. What else is more overweight? Healthcare is underweight from 13 to 8. So it just shows you healthcare probably a bit overvalued. Consumer defensive, the SP is 6. It's only 2.7, so not a lot of opportunity there. Industrials, right around the same as the S&P, 10%. Communication services, the S&P is 8%. This is only 1.3. So it shows you how pretty much overvalued a lot of the communication services sectors are. Consumer cyclicals about on par with the S&P. Financial services down to 6% from 13 of the broader S&P. And basic materials, we've talked about liking that. The broader S&P only about 3%. This is 13%. So I definitely like the sector breakdown. If you want large cap exposure, nothing wrong with that Invesco ETF. But as Luke said, that Avantis fund is pretty good on the small cap side. There we go. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at investtalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Hello there. My name is Carl, calling from Florida. I've listened to your program for a couple years now, and I'm wondering if you comment on companies that are listed on international stock exchanges. I came across a company when I was looking at some holdings of different international ETFs, and the company I've been looking at is called Investor. Its symbol that I've researched on the Fidelity brokerage account is I. For India and Norway, V Victor E Edward underscore B for boy, colon S E Sam Edward. If you can kindly give me your technical assessment of this company, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much. Bye now.
I have a different symbol, Luke. I have IVSBF. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I believe he is talking about the internationally listed one, which would be INVB.
Okay.
It's going to be listed on the Swedish exchange rather than any ADR that you might be seeing that's listed in the United States.
Interesting. So is this Investor AB is so-called buy-to-build strategy. So what it looks like it tends to buy companies over time. And yeah, listed.
So I'm gonna correct you there. So I think you might be looking at one of their funds. What the caller was referring to is the investment management company itself. So they engage in long-term investment opportunities, which may include some listed funds as well in both listed and unlisted private companies. You know, as with any investment management company, you and I talk about this a lot, is they have to deal with fee compression. So over time, even with international companies, growth is going to slow. It slowed to 5.5% over the past 5 years annualized. They took a dip in 2020, and they've been on the mend, so to speak, recently. But, you know, it's priced to book value. It sits at a 1.2. So from a relative multiple perspective, it's not too overly priced, and it's been pretty strong over the past 5 years. But I just think, you know, generally speaking, for me at least, if you're looking for an investment management company, I would tend to stray away from buying the local line of an international investment manager. It can get very complex in terms of regulation.
Yeah, I will say the chart looks strong, though. So
it's strong. It's strong.
Yeah, it's fairly illiquid, but their profit margins or return on equity, 19%. That seems like a quality business in my mind. But yeah, there's definitely some higher risk here. I think you can find better domestically. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch a bit on immigration. And this is something that, you know, it's a political discussion on whether immigration is bad or good long term. But it's pretty clear that economically, immigration is a positive. And you can just see that in the diametrically opposed border situation. Here in the U.S. versus in Asia, as well as the trends in the growth rates of the economy. For example, Goldman Sachs estimated recently that above trend immigration this year will boost potential growth by around 0.3 to 2.1% for 2024. So immigration policy in the U.S., although once again a touchy subject, is boosting the overall economy. You know, they're filling in many times a skills gap that makes the economy more efficient. That's certainly true, both on the high end, think of, you know, importing engineers from overseas, as well as on the low end and you know, coming from, you know, countries that, you know, where there aren't a lot of, you know, education, but, you know, they fill a lot of those blue collar jobs. And then in Asia, what you're seeing, Japan is a good example. Japan has an aging population. They have very tight immigration policy. And what they're seeing is labor costs going up about 5% year over year. And that, even though the economy is not growing very much, they're tightening their monetary policy because of inflation. So part of that is the debt situation. Part of that is their labor dynamics. But, you know, what do you think about the general thought of how immigration plays into economic growth long term?
Yeah, well, I think this is an interesting report, and there have been a lot of reports about this that have been fascinating to me, because the immigration situation may be one of the catalysts for why the soft landing or maybe just continued growth scenario may be the case. It's something we weren't looking at. So,
yeah.
You know, America still is a place for a lot of immigrants want to come for work and for opportunity, and that certainly still seems to be the case going forward. And it's good for the economy.
Yeah, keeping labor pressure down and economic growth up. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Carrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.